Thank you very much for the kind introduction, Ziv. My name is Emil Gargis. I'm a real estate agent here in Tokyo. I've been in Japan for 21 years. It'll be 22 years in May. I've got three little kids, aged 11, 9, and 7. We live near Shimokitazawa. I bought my first house here in 2013 when my first child was born. It was a brand new house in Shibuya. And then when we were having our second kid, I purchased my current house, which is near Shimokitazawa. It's a bigger place, four-bedroom house. I was, family was growing, and, the financing was readily available. I learned through this process all the ins and outs of purchasing. And so this was before I really got into real estate myself. So I learned it myself by doing it. And then I started to help other foreigners and just give all the information. It started off just giving information to my friends about the process and why it's such a great deal to buy in Japan, especially your personal home. And then it eventually became a business. Okay. And I've been doing that for 8 or 9 years. It sort of evolved slowly into, being more and more, involved in the process. And now where it's, I do 100% of it myself. We have an office in Ibiza with about 45 staff. I'm, one of the brokers in that, agency, largely Japanese agency. But yeah, we work with foreigners all in and around Tokyo. Most of my clientele are about 10 years younger than me in the family life cycle. That's when, when you're starting a family, you're about to buy a place. You think, I need a foundation for it. A lot of today's talk is about buying versus renting. Okay, this is the first time I'm presenting this particular slide deck. It's really messy, really ugly, lots of details and text in there, but it's going to be available for you to download. So you don't need to take too many notes because I've written it all in there, especially when I get to numbers, the break-even analysis and all that sort of stuff. So let's get into it. The first one we want to discuss, there are two sections we're looking at for today's presentation. Is buying cheaper than renting? Okay, what's the scenario in where that is the case? And then it's not just a financial decision, but also the life stage decision. Okay, what time of your life does it make sense to buy versus maybe not buy? So renting does have a lot of upside. Okay, the example I use a lot is about 250,000 yen a month of rent versus a similar equivalent kind of loan, and the kind of costs that occur when you rent. All right, so if you were to rent for 20 years, it's about 60 million yen of cost is how much you'll pay for rent. But we all know rent is just less money. I think that's why a lot of you people are even here, because a lot of Japanese will just rent forever. Okay, but Westerners, foreigners think, well, I need to understand more about this purchasing. Okay. But there are upsides to it that you can just move easily. You're not obligated to stay in one place. You can grow as your family sort of grows. So there are benefits to renting, but there is no equity in that. Now, I want to do the break-even analysis. And I said this slide deck gets ugly. This collection of five kind of slides is probably the most dense set I've ever put together. So I will try to get through it a bit quickly, leave some time for some Q&A. And as I said, this is going to be available for you to look at. For this buying analysis, I just put together sort of a break-even analysis of buying versus renting. And just to go through some of the numbers, if there's any like software engineer or finance people here, then you will love this. But for most ordinary humans, you're like, oh, crap. Okay. So on a 100 million yen loan, okay, I'll just use 100 million yen because that way, if you want to buy a place that's 150 million, you can just multiply all these numbers by 1.5. If you want to buy a place that's 80 million, just multiply it by 0.8. All right. So it's a really easy thing to work with, right? And again, the software engineers are like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. standard loan terms in Japan are 35 years, all right? And for interest rates, we can get very low interest rates, but now they're talking about interest rates increasing. So I don't want to do just a very, hey, just a cheap scenario only. We will try to look at, well, what's the upper end of the scenario? And that gives you a lower level and upper level. Okay, for the upper level, I'm doing 2%. And 2% still sounds quite low, but right now you can get a 35-year fixed loan for 2%. So if you do want to lock it in, you can lock the full term for 2%. So I'm putting that at the upper end. And then ongoing costs. Again, I don't want to ignore asset tax, fire insurance and maintenance and building management if it's a mansion. Okay, so we put that at about 500,000 yen per year. Is what you'd kind of expect at about 100 million yen kind of property, all right? At the very top end, 100 million yen loan, I'm putting in a 93 million yen house plus about 8% closing costs, so 7 million yen of closing costs. But the whole thing still comes to 100 million yen. If you want to pay closing costs yourself, you know, you can come up with that. But for just easy numbers, that's what I'm working on. I mentioned sort of cost of ownership, 500,000 yen a month. Okay. Actually, one thing I will say is the monthly mortgage repayments on a 35-year loan, if it's 0.5%, is 260,000 yen a month. All right, so it's actually really cheap to buy a 100 million yen property in terms of monthly outgoings. If you do the 2% interest, it's about 330,000 yen per month. Now, these next two slides, lots of numbers. This is, I highlighted, the only thing you really need to look at is the yellow highlighted point, and that's at year three. So this is a table at the 0.5% rate. At year three is the break-even point. That's when your equity, you've paid into the mortgage, because interest rate is so low, most of your payment is principal. Okay. When you get to the equity, to pay off enough equity that you've paid off the closing costs, the break-even point is 3 years. So if you sell the property before 3 years, you're probably at a loss because you've paid 8% of closing costs. It takes roughly 3 years to recoup that. The very left column, by the way, is the cost of renting. If you were to rent for 35 years, totals come to about 109 million yen is what you've paid in rental, right? Everything else on the right is the mortgage repayments and equity. So at 0.5%, it takes 3 years to break even. At 2%, it takes 4 years is the break-even period. So if your interest rate is 2%, after 4 years of holding the property, you'll be at the break-even point if you sell it. That's assuming you sell it for about the same price you bought it for. Right. And now we have this beautiful graph of all of those numbers put together. and again, some people are like, yes, this is what I need. And some people are like, what am I looking at? I've got the very left section here, this little year, like where everything sort of comes together over here. That's about year three or four. That's the break-even point. Okay. The red line that goes all the way down to minus 100 million is if you're renting only. All right, and renting, you just lose money all the time. That's it. There's no equity being built. The green and blue lines are the equity being, like the sold lines at the top are the equity being built over time. Again, assuming you sell it in 35 years for the same price you bought it for, 93 million yen, that's how much equity you get. The dotted lines are the costs of interest, and the annual maintenance and management and asset tax costs. Right, so 0.5%, you've paid 33 million yen over the life of the loan in costs, but you've got 93 million yen of equity when you sell it. I'm assuming no change in price of the property value. This is because you're paying your equity. So the 0.5% number and the 2% number is the interest on the loan. That's what these the dotted lines are. Okay. And I've done a 20-year mark, and then the final is a 35-year. So that line where I've put 20 years, the reason I do 20 is usually when people buy a home, it's a family home, and they are a young family. Maybe they just got married, having a kid, or they've got a young child. And so they're going to live there until the kids go to university. Okay. That means about 15 to 20 years. So a lot of times used houses, they come on the market when they're between 10 to 20 years old, because that's when the owners become empty nesters and they need to downsize. Yeah, I even think of my own property as well. We went there when we had our second kid. We've got three kids now. The oldest is in grade 6. Probably in the next 15 years or so, once they're all moved out, we'll think, do we still need to live there or not? If they all go to university overseas, right? Will we still need that property? I just want to do a quick example. We just purchased last year a property for a client that they bought it last year. It was built in 2005. They bought it in 2024. Okay, so it was a 19-year-old property. They bought it for $128 million. When we're going through the documentation, the original purchase price that the seller had bought it for was 128 million yen in 2005. And this is a three or four bedroom home in Sekigaya, not far from where I live. And now let's assume you were that buyer who bought it in 2005. And I'm just making some assumptions here that they bought it fully financed with 8% loan, so 8% closing costs. So they bought 138 million yen on a 35-year loan term. I'm just putting 1% as an interest rate. Okay, I don't want to go too high or too low, anything unrealistic. I like to make it a bit, real assumptions. The monthly payment, including closing costs, including the ongoing repairs and taxes and stuff, I'm putting about 390,000 yen per year. He sold it in 2024. Like, my client bought it for 147 million yen. So held for 19 years. This is a breakdown. I've said the person who bought it and sold it after 19 years, the total interest on loan was 20 million. There's asset tax and insurance and maintenance was about 7 million. The remaining balance after 19 years on that mortgage, the 138 million mortgage, would have been about 70 million yen, 69 million yen. Okay, so the total cost is 96. They sold it for 147. So the seller made 51 million yen on 19 years. So he lived in it rent-free, essentially, and still coming out with 50 million yen on top. Now, that's assuming the market sort of goes up. People often talk about Japanese houses depreciating. The past 15 years or so, it's constantly been going up. The past 5 years, we've seen, even more growth. But what this kind of highlights is that it really, even if a property depreciates, it has to go down to very low levels for it to still be a worse off than renting. All right, thank you for bearing with me through that. Showcase of just a whole bunch of numbers and graphs. But yeah, that really just, the big thing is that I want to show on that is it does make sense to buy for lots of different scenarios. And I'm going to discuss those scenarios now. This is talking about the right home fit for your life stage, because buying a house is not always the best option. So I'm going to go through some typical questions that I ask my clients and the discussion that I have, and this is based on my own personal experience. So I bought a first house when I just got married and we were pregnant with the first child, had the family sort of grow. So a lot of that is my own experience in terms of room sizes, layouts, a whole bunch of stuff that affect family lifestyle and life stage. Often my big question to a lot of clients is, are you planning children? Or do you want to have kids? Yes or no? Because that's one of the most significant things about the size requirement for a home. And a lot of times we want to buy a home because we want to have a foundation to build to raise our family. Yeah, that was definitely my motivation. Will you outgrow the property in 2 or 3 years? Okay, well, is it in the chart that I showed before? 3 to 4 years is like the break-even period. If you buy the wrong place or buy a place that you're going to outgrow in that kind of time, you're going to lose money. It's not going to be the best choice. Is this going to be your retirement home? And a lot of people have the idea that they want to buy now their dream home, their forever home. But as I said, a lot of people, depending on your stage, you're only going to be there for 2 decades, not your retirement. Right? Probably what's good for you now is not good for you when you don't have the family living at home anymore. So my big thing is, don't just buy your dream home, right? Buy the home that's really right for your current stage of life. So there are three sort of scenarios that I'm going to work through here. The first one is starting a family, as I touched on, which was me 11, 12 years ago now. A lot of families that come to me, they've got just maybe a newborn, like, you know, 4 or 5 months old, are driving around showing houses to a couple with a 5-month-old baby. And I've been there, done that. So I'm very familiar with, you know, crying baby in the car all the time. Or nearly, you know, engaged couples, nearly married. They're like, oh, yeah, we're getting engaged. We're engaged now. I'm going to do the paperwork soon. Your priorities should be, room to grow. Okay. A 1 or 2 LDK might be all right if you have a baby. But in 2 or 3 years, that's going to be really, you know, a really tight space. Proximity to parks, okay, schools, childcare. You don't realize this when you don't have kids. The moment you have kids, I basically live at the park for the first 5 years of having a child. And I think, yeah, some of the giggles come from people that are like, oh, yes, that's right. You know, I remember those days. And people that don't have kids are like, yeah, no, I don't think I'll ever go to the park at all, as long as, you know, the bars and nightlife are good. You guys have a separate slide coming up. It's a big one. It's just room to grow. All right. A typical plan is 10 to 20 year plan. Right. If it's only 5 years and then you're going to have to move, maybe it's not the best choice of house for you. The next one, power couples and dinks. Okay. I like you guys as well. I consider you almost single, but you guys have a little bit less, more flexibility, but a little bit different to straight up a single person. So you have high earning potential. So you guys make good money, and you want to live in a nice central location, close to all the action. I live not far from Shimon Kitazawa, and that's a great spot for me. I live about 2 stops away from it in a residential area. Shimon Kitazawa is a bit too hectic for me, but it is great for the power couples. They want to buy there, like lots of... There's nightlife, lots of bars, restaurants, easy access to Shibuya, easy access to Shinjuku. All people live in Minato-ku, okay, Shibuya-ku. They can afford it. It doesn't have to be too big. And they still get the flexibility that they want. Okay. It's all right for them to be there 3 to 7 years because they can afford it. And it's right for that stage of their life. And then if they do decide to have kids, it makes sense that they can, get a bigger place in, 7 years' time or so. People that are mid-30s, power couples that are mid-30s, they've either decided that they want to have kids if they're, or kids are going to come soon. You know, it's hard to be at that age and still be really unsure about whether or not you want to have kids. And then singles. You guys are, I don't get a lot of single clients because, especially foreigners, they're very flexible. if they get a good job offer in Singapore or in the US, they're just going to leave. They have zero commitment, zero obligation to really stay here. But there are some that do think, look, you know, it still makes sense to buy. I'm comfortable. I like Japan a lot. I want to be here for, yeah, quite a few years. If they're still in their 20s or maybe early 30s, especially with guys that are like, I'm not so interested. I don't have a girlfriend and no rush for to settle down. And they're going to be, you know, about 5 years or so at least in the property, then buying makes sense. And it's okay to be in a small space. Right? They, a one LDK is sufficient for them because they work from home under their living room, and that's completely fine. And they do know if they do decide to get married or, you know, if they have a girlfriend, you use the phone, guys, right? If they get a girlfriend, there will be enough room for them to have the girlfriend live with them. And by the time they get married, if they do get married and do have kids, that's going to be 3 to 5 years away, assuming that they don't even have someone in mind right now. Okay, if they do have someone in mind, they are going to get engaged. Then I'm like, look, you want you're that young family sort of section, right? If you are engaged, have someone in mind. These people don't even have a partner at this stage, okay, but they still want to buy a place. If you really don't know about your job in the future, you want to maybe jump around or change, you want that flexibility, then continue renting, right? But there are three big categories that I see. Now I'm starting to see a fourth, which is, I was talking to one of the other guys earlier, I'm meeting a lot of guys that are in their mid-50s now, that their kids have moved out. You know, they're about 10, 15 years ahead of me in that life cycle. And they are the downsizers. Like, okay, and we want to sell our house. Okay, we want a smaller place, just my wife and I, maybe in a mansion or something. So that's another category that I'm seeing come along now. Common mistakes that I see that people make is, I mentioned this earlier, they're buying their dream home. Or they want a place that, I want this, that I want it to be my hub, and I want to be able to retire and just forever have this one spot. If you are just a young family now, I think it's really hard to find a place that does both really well. It's going to be a great place for you to raise your family and also a great place for you to retire in. Your needs and wants are going to be, I feel, a little bit different. And you may not even know what you want in your retirement. You know, I ask a lot of people, well, I get this question a lot, do I want to retire in Japan? I don't know. That's a really difficult question to answer. And I think if I put that to you, you'd be like, I can't commit at this stage. I don't have an answer. So a big one is buy what's right for you now, not, I think, trying to forecast something or do a great job of raising a family and retirement, because then you're compromising on a great place to raise a family or a great place to retire. Right? Or they're compromising both. Under or overestimating your costs. So I did mention home loans are really cheap. A big one is often the Japanese side is very conservative about costs and loans and debt. So they don't want to borrow too much. They want to keep it really low. And especially if they're a young family, the Japanese side will do estimates. I need 10,000 yen, like, you know, you go on the financial planner websites, and how much do you want to spend on clothes per month? Oh, well, for me and the kids, we say 10,000 yen. And education and university, oh, let's say, you know, 20,000 yen a month, food is going to be X amount. And they come out with this really, you know, their expenses are going to be really high, so they don't have a lot of borrowing capacity. Like, they don't want to pay out too much per month. But they don't consider any income potential growth. But they're now at, you know, 31 years old, my income now is going to be the same income forever. So there's no expectation of, they've done worst case scenario for costs and expenses and worst case scenario for income growth. Like, neither of those situations are realistic, but you're limiting yourself to the quality of life you're going to have. And by quality of life, I mean, you're going to be far away in a small place versus you're going to be in a more convenient location for you and probably have a bigger space. So that's the main issue with underestimating your costs. Overestimating costs and not income. The flip side of that is underestimating your costs. And this I can see happen with, if you have the power couple, for example, and they get a loan based on the dual incomes. So they can borrow a lot. And if they are not planning children in the future, that's fine. But if you clearly know, look, we're going to have a family and my spouse is going to be out of work for 3 to 5 years raising my 2 or 3 kids, you're going to have a significant drop in the income coming in. And then it will be financially difficult for you to maintain the mortgage. So that's something also you want to keep in mind, is forecast any potential income changes in that regard. Westerners, like I'm from Australia, it's very common for us to try to max out financing. Right? Cost of living is really going up, house prices going up. But going up, it's always been, let's borrow as much as possible. How much can we get? The most amount. And I think a lot of people are nodding on, I see how much money I can borrow, and then I buy the most expensive thing I can. Right? We don't do that with anything else. We don't do that with cars. We don't do that with clothes, but we do that with homes, right? So, and then if your income changes, you're in a lot of financial stress. So also be cautious of that. Don't underestimate and don't overestimate your ability. And that's why in the simulation, I try to be very fair and put both, the upper end and lower end of interest rates and be conservative with the estimates. I think buying is a great option, but I don't want you to put yourself in an uncomfortable position. You're going to be really happy and really comfortable. And I'll touch on, on the next slide, I'll touch on that a little bit. Another mistake is just the short-term thinking. I just need a place that's suitable for me right now. Okay, I mentioned this in various different aspects. Think a little bit more long-term. Okay, 5 or 10 years at least. Okay, less than 5 years is probably not wise. I still have some clients now that reached out to me 4 years ago, 5 years ago, still looking for the perfect property. And they're still renting this undersized, small two-bedroom with two kids that are like 5, 6 years old now. They knew that they had to buy a few years ago. And they just keep delaying it. They keep looking, waiting for the unicorn. And you've given up 5 years of potentially very nice living by just renting a place, waiting for this dream to happen, this perfect property. Don't wait for that. Okay. It may never happen. On the flip side of that, I've got one family now. The kids started school at the American school down near Chofu. And they're thinking, and they don't really want to live in that. Like they moved there. They're renting now. They want to buy a place. They don't really want to be there long term. It's not the area they used to live in, like Nataku earlier. They moved just for kids. And the kids are going to graduate in about a decade. So right now they're thinking, should we just buy a used place or should we build our own home? So to buy land and build your own home, and it's going to be when you do a custom build, it's going to be very expensive. And it's about 12 to 24 months away. Usually if you find land to when it's ready to move in is about 12 months. They're not even at that stage. So they're, 12 to 24 months away. By the time they move in there, they're only going to be there for 8 years, and then they're going to leave. Okay, so be a bit strategic with how long you want to use a property. Trying to find always your perfect home. The word dream home, I don't really... I think in Japan, I like to use the word find the right home for you versus the dream home. I jump online, they're dream homes. In Tokyo, in Japan, I know that dream homes, just the right home. and I'm waiting on the salary for PR or a new job. This is where I think reach out early and have a discussion about what you can and cannot do with your situation. Some people think I must have permanent residency in order to apply. Or they say, I've just changed jobs, but I'm going to change my job, so I have to be working there for 1 year or 3 years before I can get a loan. They've made this condition on themselves without knowing the information clearly, but it could be possible that they're eligible for a loan right now. I've got one client who reached out. We just got approval for 140 million yen, and he's been here for about 4 weeks. Okay, but he's got a Japanese wife, and there was an internal company transfer. Okay, he transferred. So the bank looked at him and said, well, okay, you've been at your company for 6 years. That's how they've assessed it. And you have a Japanese wife. Okay, you meet the requirements. And we've just got a letter from your employer about what your expected salary is. And they just briefed him last week for 140 million yen. And so they're still renting in the monthly accommodation. And I just made an offer actually on yesterday, and they're going to get back to us on Monday with that. So ask early rather than just making the assumption that you need to wait. At last, ownership is a tool, not just a goal. And from earlier on, I say, you save a lot of money, you build a lot of equity by owning a property. So in 10, 15, 20 years, when you want to sell it, you're not starting at zero. You have 10, 20, 50 million yen worth of equity saved up that gives you a good stepping stone to the next property. And anyone here who's a homeowner in Japan is like going, yes, I'm very happy that I bought a decade ago because I've got lots of equity in there. Okay. I don't think anyone that's bought in the past, several years or before thinks that it was a bad choice. Okay. They're probably one of the best decisions that they've made. And also in that time, you have a great place to raise your family or just to be very, very comfortable, especially renting as a farmer in Japan. Every 2 years, you're almost begging for the renewal, or if you're looking to rent a new place, it's just such, you feel like such almost a victim, or you're at the mercy of the real estate agent or the owner or the guarantee company. So just, I think ownership is a tool for your life, not just arbitrary goals. Like, oh, I must own a property to check a box, which feels like what it is in the West, but I think in Japan, the mechanics of it are quite different. Thank you very much for your time. I do believe that's the last slide. I do have a little Q&A. There we go.
Well done.
Yeah. 34 minutes. Good. We've got 5-10 minutes for Q&A before the next presentation, so help yourselves. I'll be running the microphone to you, so just raise your hands and ask your questions. There we go.
Sure.
And just also, with this conversation, so right after this, from 11:30, next door in the room, the room 609, the breakout room, I'm going to be doing another presentation or another discussion about home loans and financing. So if there are any questions about that, please do come to the next room afterwards. That's really useful if you're a resident here in Tokyo, probably not suitable if you're a non-resident, which Alicia, who's talking right after me at 11:30, so I've got two talks going simultaneously. Alicia's going to be talking about loans for non-residents. So if you don't live in Japan and you want to buy an investment property, that's her talk. I'll be next door talking about loans for residents. So if you have questions about that, please do come next door, send me around in terms of financing. Also, sometimes people think these questions, we are a business-sized group. You may not be comfortable asking some personal questions or are questions that expose too much personal information. So if that's the case, you can email me or scan the QR code. You can book a meeting. I've opened up my calendar for the next 2 weeks. There's this flyer, and I think I've gotten some of the tables. The QR code there, just if you want to meet me or email me, is pretty straightforward. But let's go ahead and jump into questions.
Test, test. Good morning, everyone. My name is Ray Marrero. I've lived in Japan, depending on which calendar I use, at least 20 years. And what he said about moving here and starting from zero, for example, I'm an attorney. I was a practicing attorney. You know how humiliating it is to have your brother-in-law guarantee key money? Back in the States, Mr. Marrero, what do you think? But over here, they always looked at my wife. Now, there's nothing wrong with my wife, but it is a fact of life. What he said is spot on. And what was the other one that got me angry? key money, the rent. My question was, besides my anger comment, I've always wondered, how do they judge the credit worthiness? Now, I don't know how, if most of the people here are Americans, we all live and die by the credit score. All of us have memorized our credit score. All of us know our balances to every single credit card, every outstanding loan, mortgage. That's just the game. I have a lot of credit cards because I know how to play the game. How do they do it in Japan? Because is it like the Mad Men where you had a nice job or you work for the government and you're stable? Because I know in Japan, everything is about stability. So I was a very unstable. So, I wouldn't loan me money. But in American system, I'm a very stable person. I've always been employed. And I know the trick in the U.S., the more credit you have, the more they give you. I get offers every single day. And if they're willing to give me money, I'm willing to say, thank you. So my question is there like a rating system, or is it still the old, you work for JR East, you're a good risk, you're going to be there forever, we're going to lend you money? Like in the old days.
So a very good question. What about credit score, credit worthiness? So I just put this slide up, cic.co.jp, the Credit Information Center. This shows your credit worthiness. Actually, so this is what the banks check, and they can jump online and have a look at your credit score. It's not a score. It's wrong to say credit score. Look at your credit history, what your current loans and credit cards are, and if you're paying them on time. So Japan, when they do the loan assessments, they don't check your credit score. They check, do you have bad debt? Have you defaulted on your credit card or mortgage repayments? Or a car or a mobile phone repayment. That's probably the big one where I see defaults is people have bought a phone from SoftBank, and then the final 2 months or 3 months, maybe they've moved house, they didn't update SoftBank, they've got a 20,000 yen unpaid phone bill that's from 5 years ago. And you look at the credit report, and it says, every month for 5 years, you've got a 20,000 yen outstanding payment with SoftBank. And then they say, you're blacklisted. You got to contact SoftBank, pay off that bill, and then wait 5 years for that blacklist mark to go. So Japan does not look at your credit score, credit worthiness. If you've never had a loan, never had a credit card, never had a mobile phone contract where you bought the phone and have to pay monthly, then they look at it and say zero. You have nothing on there. That's very clean. So they don't look at a high score. They look at bad history. That's straight away blacklisted. The other thing that they'll look at then is, your employment, if you're a permanent employee, and they look at your salary. And we'll go next door and we'll talk about it, but basically, you can buy about 8 times your annual income, is the back of the envelope calculation of how much your buying capacity is, assuming you have stable employment.
Next question, please. Hands.
You were talking about different profiles of people who are purchasing houses. The last one you mentioned, the empty nester, can you talk a little bit more about that profile? You mentioned they're like mid-50s, but what are they looking to buy? And what are some of the other characteristics of that profile?
Okay, yeah, so the empty nester profile, people where the children have moved out and they've got maybe a 3 or 4 bedroom house. It's a large place for just a couple. What their profile looks like, what are they looking to move to? So they are in a situation where they can sell their existing property and they've got equity from that. Okay, so they pay off the mortgage. And again, like the example that I used, the person who bought the house in 2005, they come up with about 50 million yen of equity in that property. So they have options. 50 million yen probably cannot buy them another place that they want, so they will still need to get a loan. But it can be a much smaller loan, or they can still get a full loan, 35-year loan, and they've got 100% financed, and just have that extra cash to do investments or whatever else they want to do with it. But often their requirements are they want to be, if they lived in a house, they move to a mansion. Is pretty common because they don't want stairs. There's no need to have stairs go up and down. They think, look, in when I'm in my 60s and 70s, I don't want to go up and down in the stairs, right? I don't want to have the maintenance headache, right, with a wooden building, right? Just a mansion has, it's concrete. Maintenance is, I pay a monthly fee for manager and maintenance, but I don't have to deal with it myself. You have better insulation as well with a mansion. So especially when you get older, I think possibly you're more susceptible to the climate situation. They are the big ones. But then also, at that stage, you know where you want to be, which area. So you don't need to be close to a school anymore. Okay, or maybe you want to be close to, maybe your work situation. You know exactly what you're doing for work. And you're not going to maybe just want to change employment. So we're a bit more familiar with the lay of the land and know where you want to be. But usually they downsize to a mansion with more suitable conveniences for their needs in their current stage of life. But that's the big one. They get just a smaller place. They got some extra equity. And they're trying to get a loan still for it. Don't wait for your... Once their kids have moved out, one thing to keep in mind is if you are going to get financing, when you're about 60, the bank is going to turn around, or late 50s, the bank's going to say, you've only got a decade worth of employment left. How are you going to pay for this property? It might be hard to get a full 35-year loan. So if you're still in your mid-50s or under 60, it's probably easier to get a 35-year loan. The bank won't ask, what are you going to do after retirement?
Emil, I got two questions from the stream as well, if I can. First one is, while we don't have permanent residency now, we plan to get it next year. We want a loan to purchase our home. Where should we start? I guess the question is, do they qualify?
That's difficult. Assuming that neither spouse is Japanese, they're planning for PR. If they're a married couple, is it other married? So it's a little
older. Doesn't mention. Doesn't mention.
Yeah, so if they're a married couple, and they have good employment, and they've been here for, 5 years at least.
Not married, they say.
Yeah. If you're not married, is it a single person or a couple?
Couple.
As a couple, you may need to get married on paper. And then there's banks that, at the loan office, right? If they're considering buying together, they just don't want to do that process. You can possibly get it now. Without permanent residency, if you're a married couple and made a bunch of other conditions. If you're single, then go like unmarried, then yes, just wait for PR.
One more question. Are there certain regions where renting is much more cost effective than buying due to high property taxes, depreciation, or renovation cost? And somebody else was mentioning, is it all about Tokyo? I guess the question is, are the fundamentals maybe different in other parts of the country?
Ziv, maybe you can speak better when you talk about the fundamentals being different in other parts because you cover all of Japan. I focus mostly on Tokyo. Tokyo is very much been sort of going up. Asset tax is very, I think, very affordable, very cheap. In practice, it's about 0.25% of the actual property value is what we see the asset tax of being. So I know other countries that's really tough. In Japan, I think it's very reasonable. And we're seeing prices constantly going up. So I can't speak for outside of Tokyo, but the fundamentals in Tokyo are very good.